Tommy McNeil. Vice President Kamala Harris has held a meeting with a member of Israel's wartime cabinet who came to Washington in defiance of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. That meeting Monday with Benny Gantz, a rival of Netanyahu, played out as the Biden administration intensifies its efforts to push more humanitarian aid into war-battled or battered Gaza. The White House says that Harris and Gantz also discussed the urgency of completing a hostage deal to free more than 100 people believed to still be in captivity in Gaza following the Hamas October 7th attack on Israel. The U.N. envoy focusing on sexual violence and conflict said in a new report Monday that there are reasonable grounds to believe that Hamas committed rape, sexualized torture, and other cruel and inhumane treatment of women during its surprise attack in southern Israel on October 7th. There are also reasonable grounds to believe that such violence may be ongoing. That's according to Pramila Patton, who visited Israel in the West Bank from January 29th to February 14th. The nine-member technical team, based on first-hand accounts of released hostages, she said the team found clear and convincing information that some women and children during their captivity were subjected to the same conflict-related sexual violence, including rape and sexualized torture. The report comes nearly 5 months after the October 7th event. A 53-year-old union of immigration judges has been ordered to give supervisor approval to speak publicly to anyone outside the Justice Department, potentially quieting a frequent critic of heavily backlogged immigration courts in an election year. The National Association of Immigration Judges has spoken regularly at public forums. This is VOA News. Heavily armed gangs tried to seize control of Haiti's main international airport on Monday, exchanging gunfire with police and soldiers in the latest attack on key government sites in an explosion of violence that includes a mass escape from the country's two biggest prisons. The international airport was closed when the attack occurred, with no planes operating and no passengers on site. Associated Press journalists saw an armored truck on the tarmac shooting at gangs to try and prevent them from entering airport grounds. The scores of employees and other workers fled from whizzing bullets. China's official growth target for this year is around 5%. That's according to the premier on Tuesday in the annual report on the government's plans and performance that prioritize both security and the economy, saying that the government would continue with a proactive fiscal policy and prudent monetary policy, suggesting no major change in the leadership's approach to pursuing what it calls high-quality development. The ruling Communist Party has been emphasizing the need to raise consumer spending to help drive the economy, but the consumer-led recovery it was counting on after anti-pandemic controls ended in late 2022 faltered midway through last year. French lawmakers on Monday overwhelmingly approved the bill to enshrine abortion rights in France's constitution, making it the only country to explicitly guarantee a woman's right to voluntarily terminate a pregnancy. The historic move was proposed by President Emmanuel Macron as a way to prevent the kind of rollback of abortion rights seen in the United States in recent years. In the vote during a special joint session of France's parliament, which drew a long-standing ovation among lawmakers. The measure was approved in a 780-72 vote in the Palace of Versailles. Abortion enjoys wide support in France across most of the political spectrum and has been legal since 1975. Texas's plans to arrest migrants who enter the United States illegally and order them to leave the country is headed to the Supreme Court in a legal showdown over the federal government's authority over immigration. The Justice Samuel Alito on Monday issued an order that puts the new Texas law on hold for at least next week while the high court considers what opponents have called the most dramatic attempt by a state to police immigration since the Arizona law more than a decade ago. The law had been set to take effect Saturday under decision from the appeals court. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Trump stay on the western U.S. state of Colorado's presidential primary ballot, says the U.S. Supreme Court.
The unanimous ruling from the nine justices reverses a decision late last year.
The U.N. says it's likely Hamas used sexual violence during its October 7th attack.
In most of these incidents, victims were first subjected to rape and then killed, and at least two incidents relate to the rape of women's corpses.
And France becomes the first nation to put the right to have an abortion in the Constitution.
Abortion rights activists broke into cheers.
Today is Tuesday, March 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the state of Colorado cannot use a provision in the Constitution to keep Donald Trump off the state's presidential primary ballot. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports it was a unanimous decision.
The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday rejected an effort to remove Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump from the primary ballot in Colorado one day before that state holds primary nominating contests ahead of the 2024 presidential election. The unanimous ruling from the nine justices reverses a decision late last year by Colorado's top court disqualifying Trump. The case cited a rarely invoked clause of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, Section 3, which bars from office any, quote, officer of the United States who took an oath, quote, to support the Constitution of the United States, and then, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof.
Trump incited a violent mob to attack our Capitol.
A group of Colorado voters argued that Donald Trump's efforts to subvert his 2020 election loss, which fueled the violent January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, amounted to insurrection. Trump's attorneys argued he was not an officer under the 14th Amendment and denied the allegation of insurrection. The Supreme Court ruled on Monday that only Congress, not states, can determine a candidate's eligibility under the 14th Amendment. Monday's decision clears the way for Trump to wrap up the Republican nomination. He remains the commanding front runner. His only remaining rival, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, has won but a single contest, the Washington, D.C. primary over the weekend. The Supreme Court's speedy resolution of the ballot qualification question stands in contrast with its slower pace in another case, whether Trump has presidential immunity from criminal charges. The former president is facing federal charges accusing him of illegally retaining classified documents and misleading investigators seeking to recover them, and also for a number of alleged schemes to subvert the 2020 election. The justices are scheduled to hear arguments in the immunity case in late April, a much longer timeline. The Supreme Court's 6-3 conservative majority includes three Trump appointees.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. Joining us now to talk about this is Claire Finkelstein, professor of law and philosophy from the Center of Ethics and the Rule of Law at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. So let's start at the very top and explain to us, if you can, what the court said today.
The court said in a per curiam opinion that states do not have the power to enforce the 14th Amendment Section 3 disqualification provision. And that's the provision that says that a former holder of federal office who has engaged in an insurrection is disqualified from serving in federal office again. And of course, this was the provision that was included in the 14th Amendment in order to disqualify former federal office holders who had rebelled against the Union in the Civil War from coming back into the government and serving again, to make sure that there wouldn't be further disruptive forces from Confederate sympathizers in the federal government. So it comes from a very distinct period in U.S. history, and this is the first time that it's being interpreted by a federal court. And so it's really a case of first impression at the first time that the Supreme Court in particular has had to address the matter.
Now, they said the states didn't have the power to do this on their own, but they did say if Congress makes a law interpreting the provision in the amendment and how you would go about making the determination. Is that right?
That's right. So they took a rather extreme view, the majority in this case, because they said that even a state prosecution would not be enough to make it the case that Donald Trump was ineligible from holding office. So that even if Donald Trump had been charged in Colorado with insurrection and had been found guilty of insurrection in a state court, that that would not be enough. And they said that Congress would have to pass a piece of legislation. So for example, after the second impeachment, if Congress had had an up or down vote on whether or not Donald Trump had engaged in insurrection, which, by the way, would probably easily have passed, a simple majority vote saying, did Donald Trump engage in insurrection, yes or no? And such a vote would count as the kind of legislation that the Supreme Court is saying that they would recognize as a basis for excluding him from the ballot. But of course, it would have to be, and I think, again, there would have been the votes to do it, there would have to be a majority of both the House and the Senate in order for it to count as a true piece of legislation that the court says is necessary to qualify under Article 4, under the 14th Amendment, Section 3.
Now, the court did not do something that Donald Trump's lawyers had asked, and that is clear him of insurrection. They didn't even address that, right? They didn't even take up the issue of did he commit insurrection or not.
That's right, and that's really appropriate because the Supreme Court in this case is not the finder of fact. What they are there for is to decide the legal question, and the legal question was how do we interpret this provision, the 14th Amendment, Section 3. How do we understand this provision, and what are the legal standards by which a court must apply this provision?
Now, let's say, so they still need Congress to act according to this ruling. You still need Congress to act, even if he were to go to court and be convicted.
Right, and that's a really important point to note, because one of the things, at least, that I've had my eye on is whether or not in the January 6th case, there might not be at some point a superseding indictment that would end up charging Donald Trump with insurrection or seditious conspiracy. And I thought all along that such a charge, if it resulted in conviction for either of those charges, would be a basis for disqualifying Donald Trump from running for office under the 14th Amendment, Section 3. But this opinion says that even if Donald Trump were convicted of insurrection or seditious conspiracy by a federal court, that that would not be enough to result in his being disqualified for office. So that is really what makes this opinion so strong and so almost extreme in making this remedy under the 14th Amendment unavailable for disqualifying Donald Trump from running for office.
Unless Congress passed a law that said if you're convicted of seditious activity, you can't qualify to be president.
Well, that's true. That's true. That is always available. Congress is authorized under Section 5 to fashion enforcement remedies to address an insurrection, or simply to vote that Donald Trump is guilty of insurrection, and that would do it as well.
Claire Finkelstein, the Algernon Biddle Professor of Law at the University of Pennsylvania. As mentioned, the ruling came just a day before Super Tuesday. That's when a number of states, Colorado included, hold their primary elections all on the same day. More on that and why it's important now from Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner.
15 states in one U.S. territory will hold Republican nominating contests, with more than a third of the party's delegates up for grabs. That includes delegates from the two most populous states, California and Texas, where opinion polls show Trump to be an overwhelming favorite. Trump can't officially clinch the nomination on March 5th, as he needs more than 1,200 delegates to do so. But Super Tuesday could be decisive. As for the Democrats, President Joe Biden is a shoo-in for the nomination. Long-shot bids from U.S. Congressman Dean Phillips and self-help guru Marianne Williamson, who said she was, quote, unsuspending her campaign after dropping out of the race 3 weeks prior, are not seen as major challenges to Biden. About a third of Democratic delegates will also be decided on March 5th, with a nominating contest held in 14 states, plus American Samoa. Super Tuesday is also the final day for Democrats in Iowa to mail in their ballots in that state's caucuses.
Now, I want to be clear.
In the Republican race, Nikki Haley has no clear path to beating Trump, and Super Tuesday could be her last chance to at least slow the former president's path to the nomination.
I have to say, I love Nikki Haley.
North Carolina will be closely watched, as it's one of the potential battleground states that could decide the November general election. Trump won the state in 2020 by just over a single percentage point. The state also allows voters who are unaffiliated with a party to participate in any primary they choose, which could boost Haley's performance given her strength with independent voters.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. We're following these other stories from around the world. An anti-LGBTQ bill passed by Ghana's parliament last week, which could derail international aid if it becomes law, has not yet reached the desk of President Nana Akufo-Addo. In his first comments on the bill's passage, he said, Ghana will not backslide on its human rights record. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration said the agency's 737 MAX production audit into Boeing and supplier Spirit AeroSystems found multiple instances where the companies allegedly failed to comply with manufacturing quality control requirements.
3, 2, 1, ignition, and liftoff, Falcon 9, go SpaceX, go Transporter 10.
SpaceX on Monday launched into space a methane tracking satellite dubbed the MethaneSat. It will add to a growing fleet of spacecraft in orbit that are meant to help fight climate change by publishing data on emissions of the invisible but potent greenhouse gas. A team of United Nations experts reported on Monday that there were reasonable grounds to believe sexual violence, including rape and gang rape, occurred at several locations during the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas militants.
There are reasonable grounds to believe that conflict-related sexual violence, including rape and gang rape, occurred during the 7th of October attacks in at least three locations, namely the Nova Music Festival site and its surroundings, Road 232 and Kibbutz Reim. And in most of these incidents, victims were first subjected to rape and then killed. And at least two incidents relate to the rape of women's corpses.
The UN's Pramila Patton, who says they don't believe it just happened on October 7th, but is continuing with the hostages.
With regard to the hostages taken to Gaza, we found clear and convincing information that sexual violence, including rape, sexualized torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, has been committed against captives. And we also have reasonable grounds to believe that such violence may still be ongoing against those still held in captivity. I pause and must add that I am of the strong opinion that this finding does not in any way legitimize further violence, but actually reinforces the need for an urgent ceasefire.
The UN team said it also received information from institutional and civil society sources and direct interviews about sexual violence against Palestinian men and women in detention settings, during house raids, and at checkpoints after October 7th. The detention centers were in Israel. The United States is working to get more aid into Gaza through as many channels as possible to help remedy a humanitarian disaster amid the war with Hamas. The State Department said on Monday that it describes the situation as simply intolerable.
We remain extremely concerned about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. As last week's incident in northern Gaza made painfully clear, people are desperate for food, for water, for medicine. Parents are facing impossible choices about how to feed their children. Many don't know where the next meal will come from or if it will come at all. The situation is simply intolerable.
State Department spokesman Matt Miller.
Over the weekend, the Department of Defense and the Jordanian Royal Air Force worked together to airdrop 38,000 ready-to-eat meals into Gaza. Operating out of Jordan, this operation saw a United States contribution of 66 bundles of aid packed across three C-130 aircraft delivered to those in dire need.
More allegations by Israel about UNRWA, the UN aid agency in Gaza.
Over 450 UNRWA employees are military operatives in terror groups in Gaza. Over 450. This is no mere coincidence. This is systematic. There is no claiming we did not know. Hamas exploits humanitarian organizations and uses them to commit crimes against humanity. These terrorists are employed by UNRWA. They receive salaries that are paid by the international community. Donations that are meant for humanitarian purposes, meant to benefit the people of Gaza, are funding mass murderers and rapists.
Israeli spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, who says Israel has shared this intelligence with the United Nations. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Haiti's neighbors on Monday began shoring up their defenses and recalling embassy staff as gang conflict in the Caribbean nation escalated and heavily armed gangs tried to seize control of Haiti's main international airport, exchanging gunfire with police and soldiers trying to repel them. Here's VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo.
Haiti's government declared a 72-hour state of emergency after an intense battle between the country's police against the powerful armed gangs over the weekend. Macharia Munene, a professor of history and international relations at USIA Africa in Nairobi, tells VOA the upheaval is concerning.
With Barbecue and his team saying they want Prime Minister Henri out, it is a revolution.
Barbecue, also known as Jimmy Cherizier, a former police officer and the leader of a powerful gang alliance, says the goal is to block Prime Minister Ariel Henry from returning to the country. Henry traveled overseas last week to drum up support for an international security force to intervene in Haiti. In Kenya, he and President Ruto signed a long-awaited bilateral accord that paves the way for 1,000 Kenyan police officers to lead a proposed multinational UN-backed force that would help restore security in Haiti. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Sweden has joined NATO military drills in the high north ahead of its NATO accession. Chief of the Royal Norwegian Air Force, Major General Rolf Follen, says it's been good for his troops.
We are able actually to train what we never have trained before. That is launching Swedish air operations in the framework of NATO operations.
Swedish armed forces are contributing troops, helicopters, and fighter jets as the alliance carries out its largest set of military drills since the end of the Cold War. And finally, France makes history on Monday as French lawmakers voted to include the right to abortion into the Constitution, the first country in the world to do so. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston says it was welcomed by women's rights groups and criticized by anti-abortion groups.
Abortion rights activists broke into cheers near the Eiffel Tower on Monday as
U.S. France enshrined the right to abortion in its constitution in a world first.
Pour l'adoption, 780.
In a special joint vote of the two houses of parliament at the Versailles Palace, MPs and senators overwhelmingly backed the initiative. Article 34 in the French Constitution will now read that the law determines the conditions in which a woman has the guaranteed freedom to have recourse to an abortion.
Nous célébrons une victoire historique.
Mathilde Panot, a lawmaker from a far-left party, called the victory historic.
Notre vote est une promesse aussi.
Our vote is also a promise to all women around the world who are fighting for the right to have control over their bodies.
Abortion rights are more widely accepted in France than in the U.S. and many other countries. Polls show around 80% of French people support the fact that abortion is legal, which it has been since a law passed in 1974. It was harshly criticized at the time, but in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's 2022 decision to reverse the Roe v. Wade ruling that recognized women's constitutional right to abortion, activists pushed France to become the first country to explicitly protect the right in its basic law. Far-right leader Marine Le Pen said French President Emmanuel Macron was trying to score political points, adding that it's an exaggeration to call it a historic step when the right to abortion was not at risk in France.
In reality,
the day after this Congress, nothing will have changed for women, said Alain Laporte, a lawmaker from Le Pen's party.
En fait, on a importé un débat qui n'est pas français.
The president of the Association of Catholic Families called the change an imported debate that is not French, and said that there was no need to add the right to abortion to the Constitution.
Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. And also, you can download the VOA app. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hong Kong's slide into authoritarianism and repression is getting steeper and faster. In January, authorities proposed new national security legislation under Article 23 of the Basic Law, Hong Kong's mini-constitution. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said in a statement that the United States is particularly concerned by Hong Kong's authorities' proposal to adopt broad and vague definitions of state secrets and external interference that could be used to eliminate dissent through the fear of arrest and detention. The people of Hong Kong are already suffering from the violation of their rights to free expression and assembly, which were guaranteed by the One Country, Two Systems framework agreed to under the 1984 Sino-British Declaration. That declaration, which also guaranteed a high degree of autonomy for Hong Kong, paved the way for Britain to hand over control of Hong Kong to the People's Republic of China in 1997. The loss of the freedoms and rights of the people of Hong Kong have accelerated in recent years, particularly after the PRC imposed a national security law on Hong Kong in 2020. Under the law, dozens of pro-democracy opposition leaders and advocates, including media mogul Jimmy Lai, have been charged with subversion and other security-related crimes. Rights organizations estimate that more than 1,500 political prisoners are behind bars. In addition, PRC-imposed changes to the electoral system have drastically limited the ability of Hong Kongers to participate in free elections, and independent media outlets have been forcibly closed by the authorities in an attempt to silence dissenting views and stifle freedom of speech. Spokesperson Miller also expressed concern that Hong Kong authorities will apply the proposed legislation under Article 23 extraterritorially in their ongoing campaign of transnational repression to intimidate and restrict the free speech of U.S. citizens and residents. Spokesperson Miller declared, Article 23 risks compounding the 2020 national security law that has curtailed the rights and freedoms of people in Hong Kong. Enacting additional national security legislation with vaguely defined provisions and purported extraterritorial reach would further violate the PRC's international commitments and undermine the One Country, Two Systems framework.
That was an editorial.